from KSEV, the voice of Texas. This is Guns Over Texas. Jeff Sanford and Gary Montgomery are the gun nuts. They believe in America. They fight for your Second Amendment rights. They teach safety, advanced shooting skills, and responsible gun ownership. They just love guns. Guns Over Texas starts now.
Hello, Houston, and welcome back to your favorite local live gun talk radio show, Guns Over Texas, brought to you by AM 700 KSEV, the voice of Texas, and Shiloh Indoor Shooting Range, home of your 2013 Christmas gift cards. I'm firearms instructor Jeff Sanford. Joined in studio today are CHL instructor Gary Montgomery.
Thank you, sir.
As usual, to his right, law enforcement contributor Jason Berry.
Always a pleasure.
And law enforcement contributor, my dad, Steve Sanford. Dad, hey. Welcome back.
How you doing today, Jeff?
Houston, if you have a question, a comment, you want to get involved with Guns Over Texas, we implore you to. We're here for a reason, so you can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. Gary Montgomery, Director of Guns Over Texas IT Department. How else can others get in touch with us?
You can also reach us at facebook.com/GunsOverTexasRadio. You can also reach us on the Texas Gun Talk Forum and at GunsOverTexasRadio.com, which, as some of you may have already seen on our Facebook page, I sent out a bit of an apology because we've kind of been dead for a little while on the forum. We've had some technical difficulties in getting our podcasts out. We're hoping to have that corrected today. So I've got like 3 weeks worth of podcasts I'll hopefully get to put out tonight.
All right. So, Jason, you see, we were talking before we got started here, before we came on the air, and you said that you have tons of gun-related stuff to talk about today.
Just put him on the spot.
No.
Nothing new in your gun world this week?
It's been a slow week. Just all the housekeeping stuff of trying to finish up things at work so you can go on your Christmas vacation, you know, tidying up all the loose ends and all. About the only thing I got is I ordered some more parts from Palmetto State Armory, which anybody out there who's looking to buy AR parts, Palmetto State Armory is a great place to go. They always have deals.
They always have crazy deals.
They have crazy deals. But I ordered a couple of receivers from them, and I ordered the parts kits for them, and I ordered the buffer tubes, and the buffer tubes are the only thing that didn't show up. And then on Friday night, I got the package, and I opened it, and the invoice said there was buffer tubes in there, and there wasn't. There was other things.
Oops.
No.
Like what kind of other things?
Bolt carriers.
Oh, well.
So in the grand scheme of things, I kind of won the lottery there because my $30 buffer tube was replaced with a $130 bolt carrier. So I have these mixed emotions. I need to call them and tell them that they got me the wrong stuff, but I kind of won in that mistake.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
it is what it is.
It's the Christmas season. You should do the right thing and call them and let them know.
Let them know I got an extra special gift.
Yeah, but then, you know, you could always say, but think of how much it's going to cost you in shipping for me to send these back. You lose your profit, you should just let me keep them.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to order new buffer tubes and we'll just call it even.
Gary, what's new in your gun world this week?
I'm about to have to bid adieu to two really nice pistols that Greg Garrett of Comtech let me borrow for testing the RMR concept. I'm definitely sold on the concept. It's just an expensive option for a lot of folks, or for anybody for that matter. I mean, you're looking at $600 in the sight and $120 to $175 to install it. And you know, you got more in the sight than you do in a gun. But for anybody who has trouble picking up that front sight, you know, it's a very good answer. And after a lot of testing, I've found myself saving probably somewhere in the 10% to 12% range in terms of reducing time on splits between shots. I actually got to a point that I was as fast or faster on the draw using it. It really comes into its own on longer shots.
Now, when you go back to your old guns that don't have the dots on them, are you now finding it to be a hindrance? Are you picking up the sights and going, gosh, I wish I had the dot?
Well, it's kind of weird. Now that I've spent a little bit of time with it, I almost find myself going back to my IPSC days. So I'm recognizing that I need less information than I thought I did to make that shot, if that makes sense. So my splits are still even a little bit faster now than they were when I started all this. And that's even on an iron sight gun. Now, it's not 10%. It might be more like 5%. but it has made me a faster shooter.
Do you have to give back the flatline holster too, or is that one of those?
He hasn't asked for the flatline holster back, but there were holsters that came with those two guns that are going back with those two guns.
Greg, don't ask for that holster back. It's already been in Gary's pants. We've seen it. You don't want it back. So, Dad, anything new in your gun world this week?
Oh, not much. I got the SIG back, and it seems to be working just fine.
Yeah, no, this is the 226. It's your primary duty gun. After we got it back from the factory for a thorough refurbishing, because it is definitely not a new gun. Mm-hmm. I would bet that as often as you shoot, that gun easily has at least 60,000 rounds in it.
Well, probably something like that. You know, and it gets carried every day, so it gets beat up and gets dirty and so forth. And I never had a problem with it until all of a sudden.
All the mag springs wore out at once.
That's what it seems like.
And the coil spring wore out. And so I went ahead and sent it back to the professionals at SIG. They have a really good custom shop. And got it back, and you fired, 50 rounds through it?
50 rounds and put it back on duty. And then the next time I tried to practice with it, I couldn't get the magazine out. So apparently the last time that I put the magazine in, I sheared some kind of spring or something that was wrong with it.
Shoved it in with a hammer, did you?
I guess I did. These manly hands, you know.
You know, I can relate to that. When you got man hands, you break stuff.
Yeah, you just can't help it. Anyway, so we sent it back to him and got it back, and I tested it the other day, and so I'm carrying it again. I'm real happy with it. It's just SIG, you know, everybody's got their own favorite toy, and the SIG just fits my hand better, and I just like the way it works.
Well, the 226 is definitely the gun of choice amongst many of your fellow law enforcement officers. And it is, I liken it, you know, we've got the Glock, the Smith & Wesson Military and Police. Those are like the hammer in a carpenter's toolbox.
Yeah.
Whereas your SIG, your HK, those are more of the precision instrument in use by the engineer.
Actually, I would liken it more to, you know, the Glock and the Smith & Wesson are your Volkswagen and Chevy, and then your SIGs and stuff are your
Mercedes.
Porsches and Mercedes.
Yeah, that could be. That could
but
be a good
in
analogy.
The grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter how nice your gun is. Every gun can and will break eventually.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
Just the frequency of the breakage we're worried about.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about a SIG breaking, you know, and we talk about Tauruses breaking every single week on here. But it's a lot less frequent in certain guns
than
others.
You know, I have sent back a number of SIG guns to SIG. The main thing about the guns that I've sent back, though, is that the vast majority of them, I think the only duty gun I've ever sent back is my dad's duty gun. Mm-hmm. Now, they're 238s, they're 938s, a couple of 250s I've sent back to the factory. So their duty guns, I would still consider to be
the hard
rough
use,
and tumble,
the classic
hard use guns.
Yeah. And the 226 is a well established design.
Yeah,
that's a bit of a workhorse. I mean, I've managed to break one or two of them over the years, but they were all high round count guns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, a new up and coming gun that we've talked about before, Baltimore County Police Department just picked up FNS, the FN. You know, they're starting to carry that. They bought like 1,900 of them.
Yeah.
And so they're getting really
probably
good
one
reviews.
Of the first major purchases
yes.
of that pistol.
Yeah, that was what the write-up was about. Yeah.
Yeah.
And as we've all said, we all shot the pistol and we all like the pistol quite a bit. It just hasn't taken off like I had hoped it would.
I like it a lot, and I think it's really going to take off. I know that in the beginning of this year, there were rumblings about a compact FNS, and it was going to fall
and you're never
right
get the
in
market.
Between the 19 and right in between the compact, the M&P compact.
You've got to have that off-duty gun. You've got to have that plainclothes officer gun. And if you can sell
you
it
can
as
share
a system.
The same magazines.
Yep, the same holsters and parts. And from an armor standpoint, again, you're not marketing to the one guy that's buying one gun. You're marketing to the guy that's buying 2,000 guns at a time.
Yeah.
And then you have the huge selling point of all the parts interchange, all the holsters and mags interchange.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. Who's shooting the gun, they can custom fit it to their hand.
That's right. And right now, if you've got, you know, Glock and M&P, hey, I've got a big one and a small one. They interchange. What do you have, FN? Well, I have a big one. Well, where's your backup gun? And FN would have to sit there and go,
Well, they would argue that it's small enough now that it would work.
But in the grand scheme of things, you know, they need that to fill the marketing niche.
Just in the last couple months, I've seen their long slide guns become available. their FNS longs, which, you know, rival the 17 long slide, the 34, the 35, the 5-inch M&Ps. And I haven't gotten a chance to get my hands on one yet, but I'm really looking forward to getting one of those. So since they just recently came out with the long slides, I'm hoping that we'll see the compact FNS guns come out shortly, because I think that's going to be a real winner in the concealed carry market.
Agreed.
Much like the new Glocks, the Gen 4 Glocks that have just the back strap, just the flat plate on the back strap that's replaced. That's a lot like what the FNS is. The FNS basically has a pronounced Glock style insert for the back strap, and then you, if you take that one off, you replace it with another one that's more of a 1911 style back strap.
Gotcha.
So you've got two grips that are familiar to shooters, whether or not they're male or female. Both of them can be had. Both of them can be easily used. It's got a high cut on the beaver tail, much like the M&P does. So you get a good solid grip every time, and it lowers that bore axis just a little bit more in your hands. So FN's got a real winner here, in my opinion. Now, I haven't gotten a chance, and nobody at the range has had a chance to – I think we've cumulatively done probably 800 rounds or so out of one of them that we had at the range, and it was near flawless. And, of course, one of the employees bought it. So it is no longer in the stable, but we'll get another one in there shortly.
Yeah, the only thing about the FN, though, the it has a plastic feel to it. I mean, I like the trigger. I like everything about it, but it just seems to feel more plastic.
It almost
than
feels
the
like a toy.
Yeah. And I didn't know if that was just me or if y'all felt the same way.
I honestly felt that the grip was somewhat blocky. I mean, the angle's good, and as far as your access to the controls, your fingers, good placement. You know, your ability to roll.
Completely ambidextrous.
Yeah, and so it's easy enough to roll your thumb around to that magazine catch and catch the slide lock and that sort of thing. So overall, ergonomically, it works well, but it does feel like you're grabbing a Lego.
I'm
a fan of blocky guns anyway. I'm already carrying a Glock.
The trigger has got kind of a, you can feel the grit in it and everything, but we noticed once we got about 500 rounds through that, the gun that we were testing, it became really smooth.
Yeah.
Really,
and that's not unusual. I mean, it's, you know, when a lot of these guns now, the internal parts for the trigger control system are stamped steel. And it sometimes takes 500 to 1,000 rounds for those parts to wear into each other, and yes, they do get smoother. I mean, that's what most people don't realize. That's what you're paying your gunsmith to do when you do a trigger job.
Yep.
All they're doing is just taking a stone and literally creating artificial wear to smooth out those parts. And so that's not at all unusual. I've had a chance to shoot the FNX a couple times. I like the gun, but like I said, it does feel like a big old Lego in my hand.
Yeah. See, now what you're talking about, the FNX, which is the double single,
The
big double single, to me, those don't fit the hand nearly as well as the FNS, which would be the FN striker fired system.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the FN striker fired system, the FN hammer fired system. And not so
well, the
much.
Trigger mechanism works in too many different modes.
Yeah,
it's kind of like the original HK USPs, you know, that Variant Zero where you had it. I think it worked in three or four different modes. So you could do cock and lock, then you could do double action, single action, on safe, off safe. It was like, just give me one trigger.
Too much to think about.
Make the lever work in one way. And that's the FNS is definitely superior in that. The only thing is, I'm not sure. It doesn't have second strike capability, though. That's the downside. That's
not necessarily the size either.
No, right. It's not a deal breaker. It's just that for some folks, that is part of their decision making.
Yeah. I figure if the round didn't go off the first time, ditch it and move on to the next one.
Right. Agreed.
Yeah.
Now, something else about the gun that I like, that I know you two guys aren't the biggest fans of, is that it does work quite well in M&P holsters. Even the Safariland ALS, which is a locking system. It is a level two retention
level
holster.
Two. Yeah.
And it fits in there perfect, snug as a bug in a rug. So, you know, if you're worried about a lack of holsters, I know that they fit perfect in M&P holsters, if you don't mind doing that kind of thing. So, Houston, we're going to take a quick commercial break, but we'll be right back with more Guns Over Texas.
The island greeting that we send to you from the land. land where palm trees sway. Here another
welcome back to Guns Over Texas, Houston. We're talking, well, we were talking the FNS for the first segment of this show, and we've got plenty of other guns to talk about today. If you want to get involved with us, you can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. If you need help picking out the perfect last-minute Christmas gift, you can give us a call. We'll be more than happy to help you out with that. All right, so we were talking the FNS.
Mm-hmm.
I have had my hands on the glory, Monty? As well as Monty called it, the Holy of Holies, which was the...
I was referring, you had your hands on Monty, but go on. It was supposed to be a joke.
The H&K 45 Tactical, which...
I don't really know how that gets to be the Holy of Holies, but okay.
For a lot of people it is, because it was really blessed by Larry Vickers, who apparently, according to some, is the second coming of Jeff Cooper and John Moses Browning together.
Well, Todd Green put 50,000 rounds
more
through
than
one in just a few weeks span and had exactly one malfunction.
And no parts breakages.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a tank.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that it's not a well-built gun. I'm not saying that it's not accurate or that it's not reliable.
Hey, I've never been the biggest HK fan either. And,
but it'll run.
And that's all I ask of any gun.
Yeah, Monty is an HK fanboy, and he's been telling me, God, we got to get these in. We got to get these in. And I'm thinking, man, you know, those are pretty expensive to bring in a bunch of them. We sold three of them the first day that we had them.
About to say they didn't stay on the shelf 24 hours.
No. They come in a black slide and green frame, black slide, tan frame, and then the holiest of the holies was the tan Cerakoted slide on the tan frame, which when we put
so
that,
that's the curb feelers, the Daytons, and the drop.
Yeah, it's the HK Cerakote.
And mud flaps.
There's less than 1,000 rounds of the black slide guns made, or less than 1,000 models of those made. And then the Cerakote, there's even less of them. So I'm not sure how 500 or 600, something like that. So about 22 seconds after it hit Facebook, Cannon Spring was calling and couldn't talk. He couldn't verbalize what he wanted. And so finally, after trying to, after
was he
trying
on the toilet
to
while
decipher
trying to do this
what he was saying, it took us about 30 seconds to get HK-45 Tactical out of his mouth. So we finally pulled it off the shelves for him. He came in. When he filled out the paperwork, he was shaking. That's how much... Some people want this gun.
I obviously have the wrong attitude about guns. Now, I like guns.
Oh, but Cannon Spring loves guns.
But, well, I mean, I love the ability to own guns, and I love using guns, and I love shooting guns. But I'm trying to think of a clean way to put this, but they're not unlike, well, we won't go there. But let's just say that none of them are family.
As soon as I said HK-45 Tactical, I'm showing the guys in the studio that Ken immediately sent
a picture
of his with his Osprey can on it, which was tons of fun to shoot. But anyway, this is it really is a comfortable gun. HK has got really fine ergonomics
in
the grips.
It is. And if you're looking for a 45 caliber pistol, the HK-45 would be on the list. Mm-hmm. It's one I would
DASA, have. DASA, it's got a decocker, a safety lever on it. Mm-hmm. It comes with a threaded barrel already. So if you're a guy like Ken, you want to put your can on it, you can shoot that thing pretty darn quiet, you know. And it is precision. It is a fine, fine shooting gun. So I got, I think one of them still in the shop right now, and I've got another two that are coming in on Tuesday.
Price.
So... they're running around $1,400, depending on the model. The Cerakote is $1,399.
Yeah.
So the black and green and black and tan are $1,299. So for about the same price as a very quality 1911, you can get an
extra
entry couple
price
of rounds.
That's entry price for 1911. That's entry price for a quality 1911, dude.
Yeah. So if you're thinking about a quality 1911, you can go ahead and get 11 rounds in your 45 shooting the HK.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and it comes with night sights, with threaded barrel. It's got the back strap that can be traded out on the back. Very, very fine.
And how much does
a
Glock 21 cost again?
You can buy two Glock 21s.
But that's and have like money saying, left over.
I would like to buy two Chevy trucks instead of one Mercedes Jeep.
Yes, I would.
The problem there is UAW put those Chevy trucks together.
I get that, however.
All right, let's head out to line one and talk to Chris in Magnolia. Chris, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What's up?
Uh-oh, did you hit the wrong button again?
Quick question.
There we go.
Start over again for us, Chris.
Oh, already. Just say I appreciate the show. I enjoy listening to it every weekend. Hey, before the market went nuts and emptied the shelves of virtually everything, mm-hmm. I was in the process of trying to decide between a couple of different S&W models. I was interested in the Shield mm-hmm. and the M&P 9C. Mm-hmm. And ideally, I'd like to be able to hold both of them for comparison and better yet, you know, shoot each of those before I bought one. What's the probability of that? You know when these things are going to be widely enough available that can do that?
You can come on by, and we can take care of that on Thursday at Shiloh.
Oh, really?
Yes, okay. Sir.
So, all right. I need to take you up on that.
Yeah, definitely. Come on by. We'll get you squared away.
Yeah, I mean, it boils down to personal preference. I think they're both great options.
One's just a little bit fatter than the other.
The 9C is a little on the fat side, but you know, it works well as an inside-the-waistband rig or an ankle gun or something like that. The Shield works well as a pocket gun.
Okay.
It's that much thinner. And
well, okay, your pockets. Okay.
Yeah, I still don't think the Shield is not quite a pocket gun for me. It's close, but it's
works well as a pocket gun for me.
Just outside of the realm for a large man's pockets.
Yes,
and fits just fine in Gary's pockets.
When I would wear shorts that have a baggy opening around legs, mm-hmm. anyway, I could get a Shield in my pocket, no problem. But with jeans, no way.
Yeah. Doing with jeans all the time.
Yeah, but Jason wears skinny jeans. And
well, stop wearing nut scrunchies. You won't have that problem. You're not a cowboy.
There's nothing skinny about my jeans.
So he says.
The truth.
Stuffed sausage. But anyway.
We're on air. We'll save that joke.
But like I said, you know, I think that they both have their advantages. The Shield is just one of the smallest packages you can get and carry six to, you know, or actually 7 to 8 rounds in the magazine, and it's a good trigger.
I think it beats the hell out of a J-frame revolver any day of the week,
all day long.
Yep. And I'm confident that you could get a Shield and not have to buy pants that are one size bigger.
Yeah,
you know, with the compact. Depending on how you wear your pants, you might have to go a size bigger, half size up.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
All right. First things first. I got to get the gun first.
Yeah. Well, like I said, come by Thursday to Shiloh, and we'll fix you up.
Yeah.
That's,
we're going to be closed Tuesday and Wednesday.
Yeah. Okay. Let me ask another question.
Uh-huh.
What do you guys hear about this ban or this move to eliminate lead ammo? And I don't know if that's just handgun and rifle.
No, California's already done it.
Yeah,
well, for hunting purposes right now. Yeah. They haven't done it for general
purposes. There's
been
a push to do it for a long time, and there's an increasing push to get in that direction. But, you know, we've kind of got this backdoor thing going on with a lead smelter that got closed down recently. That was the last primary lead smelter in the country, and they've been forced out of business. Now, all of the bullet manufacturers have said that they don't use primary lead smelters. They said that they use the secondaries. And so they're getting
comes from car battery recyclers.
Well, not just car batteries.
That's the vast majority of it.
Yes, but you've also got the lead weights from your wheels and all that sort of thing. There are a lot of different sources of lead. In fact, a lot of old plumbing is still lead pipe. Yeah. So a lot of that still gets recycled. But I do think in the long term we're going to see an impact because the folks who do use the primary smelters are going to have it shipped in to make the car batteries. And, you know, or whatever else they make.
And a big problem with the car batteries, I was talking to our buddy Rudy from Freedom Munitions, and he knows a thing or two about the lead industry, with the ammo industry.
Yep.
And he said that our biggest problem with the car batteries is that China has been coming in and buying as many of our used car batteries as they possibly can.
Absolutely.
And they're paying top dollar for them so that they can get them.
But that's not just car batteries. That's steel. That's every precious metal.
They have a growing economy and a new consumer class to feed.
And not only that, but they don't have an EPA. And so, you know, I mean, they sell their, you know, smog and all that kind of stuff as a benefit. Yeah. a tactical benefit, but they do sell it.
Yeah. Well, we also get into the idea of if we're supposed to go to this quote-unquote green ammo is what they call it, where there's less lead, obviously, in the projectile, but also in the primer system itself. The ignition system of the primer has mercury and lead and other things in it.
Well, mercury's gone, but we use lead stifenate is the most common now.
Yeah. But basically, it still lets off toxic, quote-unquote, stuff. And that's another backdoor, not necessarily gun control thing, but a backdoor way of you're hurting the environment at these big ranges. And they've been pushing the Army for probably 15 years now to come up with a green, environmentally friendly bullet.
And both the Marine Corps and the Army have tried it multiple times.
And here's the big kicker. Nobody can make it work reliably, which is why you haven't seen it mandated. And I know they keep doing this in California where they're crazy, but I don't think we're going to see it push nationwide, because if the Army can't make it work for them large scale, nobody else is going to sign on to it if they can't find a reliable ignition system that doesn't use these toxic things.
Yeah, and something about that, the lead or the green bullet for the Army is that they were trying to make a alternative bullet that wouldn't separate, that wouldn't fragment.
Tungsten, they try all kinds of stuff.
Here's the thing, they can do it, and Barnes does it all the time with their X-Bolt and their Triple Shock. Those are great bullets. The problem is the expense.
Yep.
You know,
lead is cheap and dense, and when you go to those solid piece projectiles, which are copper, they lose the weight. So, I mean, that's good if you're shooting, you know, elk and deer and stuff like that, but trying to penetrate armor plate or anything like that, you don't have the density of the lead to help get through.
So finally came out and said that they had made this super awesome bullet, they gave out flyers, I guess, for the press release. And on the cover of the press release, they were concerned about the jacket separating from the bullet on impact of glass. And they said, "We've finally done it. It doesn't separate. It retains good shape." And then the picture that was on the front page of the handout was of the separating jacket from the projectile itself. So they said, "Here's our victory," with a picture showing that they were
a failure.
Yeah.
So is this going to result in potentially then a cost and availability issue like we have now?
I think the cost will eventually go up, but the question is, right now the price hasn't settled out from all the it still hasn't settled out from all the
it hadn't settled out from 2008.
That's what I'm saying. So we don't know what the final result will be. Will it be higher? I don't think it will ever go back down to the point that 9mm is $3 a box. I think those days are over. But it might settle down
to $10 a box.
Yeah, what we're seeing now may be where it settles out, or it may settle down a little bit lower. But some of that is there's so many other factors there.
Yep.
You've got the cost of shipping as one of the factors. It's not just the lead. There's all the other components that are involved. So, and we don't know yet what the long-term effects of all those areas will be.
But we do know that good ammunition, quality ammunition, has a shelf life, 50 to 75 years, no problem.
Right.
So it's not going to hurt you to buy it now and put it away, even if you don't shoot it for 10 or 15 years. Because one thing we've only seen the price go up.
Yep.
Yeah. It's never gone down. So.
Right. What about shotgun shells with respect to the lead? I mean, I know for waterfowl,
they've got lead. And that's the hard thing to get around, is nobody comes out and says, "Hey, we're going to go after guns." Guns aren't even mentioned. It's we're putting too much lead into the environment.
Right.
And then everybody, even hunters, will be like, "Well, yeah, lead in the environment's bad." Okay, we ran this bill through, and then afterwards you find out, "Oh, wait, how come my ammo doubled in cost?"
This is what I don't get. Know? Lead comes from the environment, doesn't it?
Right.
It does, but when it gets on the water table, it's different than when it's spread out. Now, I don't understand the specifics, but they are refining and concentrating it, just like uranium is present in the in the ground, but it's not in quantities,
not concentrated
enough to do harm. And I think that's the problem with the lead too, is they concentrate in such areas.
I've got an older model Browning semi-automatic shotgun, and Browning basically told me, don't use anything but lead shot in that gun.
Right, because it'll destroy the barrel and that sort of thing.
And
that's one of the issues that comes up with all this. You know, when we had the waterfowl restrictions and everybody was forced to go to steel shot, it tore up a lot of old guns.
Yep.
And so, the manufacturers can only do so much to shield that because the barrel's made out of steel.
Yep.
And, you start getting into, what kind of weird alloys do I have to push down this barrel to not wear the barrel out?
And maintain my density and maintain, because you have to have the weight and the density for the actual projectiles to do any good. Mm-hmm. So if you start getting into strictly copper or some of these other alloys.
Oh, they've gotten into some really, tungsten, which is really hard and still tears up barrels. Yep. Bismuth is another one they've tried. But at the end of the day, there'll always be somebody who can say, "Well, this is an environmental concern." I mean, even if you're just shooting steel,
Yep.
There's, you know, it's putting rust into the environment.
So, these poor ducks have rust poisoning.
Yeah, you know. So somebody's always going to find something to complain about. And you know, I don't know that we will ever find a way to avoid having to split the baby in half and just say, yeah, look, you're going to have to swallow this and be done with it to the environmentalists. That is what really needs to happen. Because it's, you know, there's nothing you can do to make these guys happy. If you keep, you know, even look at the wind farm, you know, well, the wind farms are killing the birds. Well, dang it, you said I can't have a coal plant.
Yep. So we cleaned up the air, and now we're chopping all the eagles and flocks of geese into,
exactly,
into bush.
I think it's time to get the environmentalist, grab him by the collar, and slap him in the face a few times. Maybe put a little bit of sense into it.
Well, it doesn't work.
Well, it's worth a try.
It feels good. Don't get me wrong. It feels great. But it does not work.
You know, everybody gets so offended these days. There's a network for anybody who's offended by anything. I think we should be offended by the anti-lead laws. You know, we get some backing from somebody.
Because, damn it, I want lead in my
gasoline.
That
just hurts my feelings. It hurts my feelings. I'm discriminated against.
You don't play the victim very well, dude. I'm sorry. It just doesn't work.
All right, guys.
Chris, you got anything else for us?
Yes, sir.
Thanks.
All right. Hey, when you come out and look at those Smith & Wesson M&Ps, we'll show you around the holster options, too, and help you out there.
Yeah, I've listened to that, and it sounds like that's pretty important.
Yeah,
oh,
yes,
it is. Very much.
Yeah. Okay,
thank
well,
you, Chris.
Very
we
good.
Appreciate you calling.
All righty, thanks. I know.
Right. Yeah, the right belt and the right holster will make your carry life easy.
Comtech actually makes the new flatline for the Shield.
Nice. All right.
So it's
we'll
already
be back
flat gun.
In just a minute with more Guns Over Texas.
Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring, snowing and blowing up bushels of fun. Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells chime and jingle bell time.
Welcome back to the almost Christmas edition of Guns Over Texas. That's right, I said it. Merry Christmas. If you're offended by that, well, go find something else to listen to. All right, so we've been talking about the FNS. We talked about the HK-45 Tactical. And now, Gary, being the industry insider you are, you have a little bit of interesting info coming from Gaston Glock himself, right?
Something like that. You know, I posted this on GunsOverTexasRadio.com. But, you know, rumors have been swirling for months that Glock was coming out with at least two, possibly three new handguns. And word is they're going to be the Glock 40, 41, and 42. That's the next numbers in the series.
Mm-hmm.
And allegedly...
And what do the numbers mean? It's not
sadly,
the
numbers
of the gun.
No, the first one was the 17.
Which was the patent.
It was the 17th patent. So everything that's come out after that has just been the next in the numerical line. So, like I said, we're looking now at the 40, 41, and 42, the next that are up. The only two that have been confirmed or semi-allegedly confirmed from multiple sources have been the 40 and the 41. Now, the 40 is not a 40.
No.
That's what's going to confuse everybody.
Yeah,
they're
it's going to confuse the heck out of
everybody. 40, and
but the 40 is allegedly Glock's answer to the M&P Shield from Smith & Wesson. So it's a modified single stack small locked breech handgun, but word is that it's a 380 instead of a 9 or a 40 like the Shield. So that's a bit of a disappointment. I don't know how that's going to turn out. Like I said, I have not seen one. I don't officially know anybody's got one. You know. Well, time will tell, but allegedly it'll be announced sometime around the SHOT Show because it's not currently on their website at all. Now, the other one is the 41. The 41 is a 45 ACP handgun, think Glock 21 SF with a longer slide. So it's kind of bringing the 34-35 that were introduced 15 years ago now. Mm-hmm. They're in 9 and 40. Well, it gives us that platform in a 45.
It's going to be an IDPA type.
It's IDPA, CDP, or Custom Defensive Pistol Division competition gun. So we'll see how that works out. As Jason is like making somebody's POS gun rattle here. What is that, a Kel-Tec?
Well, Mac has decided to join us in studio, and I guess
that's
all these
the George
new
Zimmerman
guns
gun,
coming
it?
Out. He decided that a Kel-Tec, what is this, PF9?
Is that the joke?
P11. Sorry.
But while we're on air, he lifts up his pants leg as Gary's talking, starts showing me his new gun on his ankle.
It's not new.
It's a purple frame with a green slide.
I was going to say, beautiful. This reminds me of the Joker from
it's
Batman.
It's beautiful.
It's a green.
I would say
I
that
did
it's
myself.
A Montrose pistol, but
may
it is not color
this?
Coordinated well enough for that.
I did it myself.
And then
that's
you
beautiful.
Take a look at the lint.
So Mac,
the lint buildup yes. in that thing.
Now, yeah. question: why?
So, what'd you color this with? Crayon?
No. It's a patented.
Krylon?
No, it's a patented process that I do myself to make beautiful guns even more pretty.
Of all the color schemes you could have chosen, why was green and purple anywhere?
Because I couldn't do pink, and I'm trying to make it for my girlfriend. She wants the pink Nano for Christmas, and I didn't want to spend $400, even though she's listening, or $500 on the Nano. And so I thought I could make a pink P11.
So I told her
P11.
I was too cheap to get her what I wanted.
Yeah,
so.
That's right.
So how did you end up with purple if you were trying for pink?
Because I couldn't do pink. There's no way to do pink. So I just had to do the next girly color, which
no,
is
no, they do pink. Pink's available in Krylon and everything.
Yeah. Not in Rit Dye.
Who Dye?
Yeah.
Okay, folks, this is an example of the don't try this at home.
Oh, this is an example of a perfection.
Do as we say, not as we do. Do not go out and buy a Kel-Tec and try to dye it pink. For
it's purple, sake. And I never intended to dye it pink. It's a beautiful, perfect excuse for a pistol.
Okay. I hope you did her right for Christmas, because, man.
I even did a trigger modification involving a paperclip.
Oh, so you're saying it's safe.
In other words, I'm glad there's no ammunition in this gun.
Hey, man. I'm a sober.
All right. Let's get back to real topics here. What do we have?
Well, okay. Let's just go out to the phone lines. Out in Cyprus, Kevin, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, Kevin?
How y'all doing?
Good,
we
sir.
We were doing great until this Kel-Tec showed up on our desk.
Yeah, that's about how I feel about them, too.
Amateurs.
I bought my buddy a Thompson 1927 A1 a couple years ago. That drum magazine with that thing is like a real piece of work. Is there any tribe knowledge about it to make it work?
The drum magazine on a Thompson is, I mean, it is what it is. They look cool, and if you're talking your iconic 1930s gangster look that you want to have, they're great. But in the end, any drum magazine is a pain in the butt to load, a pain in the butt to maintain, and a pain in the butt to get it really tweaked to where it works right. I mean, aside from the cool factor of it looks cool, I really don't know why you wouldn't just go stick magazines.
Yeah, that's the way we go. But it's like we can't eat. You've got to, like, knock the thing in sideways mm-hmm. to get it into the gun.
I know the feeling.
Yeah, you got to put it in sideways, and you have to, once you load the magazine, you have to tighten the spring with a little special key to wind the spring tension and stuff. I don't know enough about them to be able to diagnose if it's not working, why it's not working without looking at it some. But I know enough about them that if I were going to be someone who runs a Thompson, I probably wouldn't have much to do with the drum mags.
Okay, that's where I come in, but, you know, he wants the whole gangster thing.
you're going to have to find somebody with a little bit more Thompson knowledge than I
yeah,
have,
I
sir.
Would, I, well, talk to the guys over at Collectors. I mean, they've had a bunch of them over there through the years. So there's guys there that know that gun pretty well.
Okay, that's a good resource. Don't have to twist my arm to go there.
Yeah, it's a bit of a museum at times, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
All right, Kevin, we appreciate you listening to Guns Over Texas.
Thanks a lot.
Mac, I got to ask you, when was the last time you cleaned that thing?
last year.
No, it was last week.
Okay.
So you're just that dirty.
I'm filthy.
No, everybody likes to pick on Mac, but I'm not picking on you right now. Because seriously, when we pulled back on that slide on that thing, it is caked with lint and dust and dirt.
I'm carrying it on my ankle.
And that's the nature of the beast with ankle carry.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm trying to get
at. Well, you even run into that with pocket carry. Mm-hmm. You know, if you carry a gun in your pocket, you're going to get a lot of lint and that sort of thing on it. And it's something you have to be aware of. And you probably end up having to take it out at least once a week, maybe even every few days, to blow all that crap out of it.
Yeah. Now, you can use canned air, you know, like you use dust on computers and such. But I would suggest at least a field stripping. Take the slide off, run a patch over it, and get that thing clean.
And plus, I tend to lubricate my pistols a little more than recommended.
Mac likes to drop his pistols in a 5-gallon bucket of oil, let them sit for a couple days, then take them out and drop them in his holster.
An oily gun is a happy gun. And it is an open lubrication system. It will get rid of anything it doesn't need.
All right, let's head out to Seabrook and talk to Ron. Ron, welcome to Guns Over Texas.
Yeah, I always hear y'all saying bad things about Bursas. And I'm just curious because I've got a Bursa Thunder 380 that I've never had any problems with. Mm-hmm. Every review that I've read has been stellar on it. When I got my first concealed carry license, my instructor told me it was a good gun, and he's not like some.
Well,
your instructor needs to get on the range a little more often.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to beat around the bush. That's crap. Mean, you know, any instructor that's recommending a Bursa hasn't done enough shooting. That's all there is to it.
They may or may not work, but like anything else, we can't say 100% that every Bursa that came off the line is going to break any more than we can say every Bursa that came off the line is going to work. It doesn't work that way. We're talking about you have a sample size of one, and your sample size of one runs fine. But if
why do I keep reading 99% of my
Because people pay money to get their advertisement in the publications. And
yeah.
Talking about publications. I'm talking about people that do reviews all the time.
These are people that have never shot another kind of pistol.
They get sent the gun for free, and it's one of the things, if you want to keep getting guns from certain manufacturers, you give good reviews to them, or they no longer leave you. Trust me, if you read blogs over and over again, you'll notice like Gun Nuts and Nut and Fancy and stuff like that, you'll find that there's not a gun they don't like.
I think he's talking about reviews on like message boards. You know, because Bursa's got fanboys all over the place.
And that's true. And there are people, though, if they admit...
The average person that's going to get online and talk about how great their Bursa is, that's the first gun they ever purchased.
And they put 50
rounds through it in the 2 years that they've owned
it. But in internet rounds, 50 is 5,000. Mm-hmm. So...
Yeah.
There you go.
Shoot a Glock or an M&P first, and then see, you know, compare it to the.
If his gun works, his gun works.
Let me offer this. Let me offer.
Let me offer. I've also never had any problems with my Bursa.
I offer that you can come stand with me at the counter at Shiloh Shooting Range any Saturday when we have a CHL class, and you can watch as the instructor has to continually help the person with the Bursa.
Yeah.
Well,
with the Thunder 380.
Yeah.
Especially the Thunder 380.
Let me offer a counterpoint. Just to play the devil's advocate so we don't have to be everybody pile onto the poor guy.
He might have one that works. They make one that works occasionally.
I have seen Bursas that run.
Okay. I have too. I've seen just as many that fail as that run. It's a good 50-50 split I've seen.
I can't refute that one.
Yeah.
But the fact is that if you have one that runs and it runs for you, then be happy with it is the only thing that I think.
If you haven't gone to the store yet and made the purchase, and there are ways we could steer you towards something that has a higher chance of being reliable from the time you buy it, that's what we're trying to do. It's not to say that if you already have a Bursa and it works for you that somehow you're a horrible, evil person. You're not. You got one that works. You know, and there's a guy out there with a Dodge with 400,000 miles on it. It does happen, you know. Not often, but it does.
Mine made it to 165. Stop poking fun at me.
There's a guy out there with a Toyota that's been in the shop, you know, 10 times before it hit 30,000 miles. And he's the exception to the rule because generally your Toyota is going to run forever without any problems. And that's what we're talking about with the guns we deal with usually. It's the generalization of from the hundreds that we'll see at any given time, we know that brand X generally is going to be one that runs more often than not, and brand Y is going to be one that's going to fail a little bit more often than not. And that's what we're trying to point out here, not to rag on you or your choices.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
No problem, sir.
Thank you, Ron. Right. We appreciate you calling.
See, that's the diplomatic way to do things, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Well, see.
There was nothing That wasn't,
you know,
diplomatic.
Jason, I mean, know, and I agree with you.
No,
I've seen
everybody's
a lot of them go
in
down.
Fear of the Argentinian army, and everybody knows the fine Argentinian craftsmanship across the world for
and
all of the
see,
things
Jason
they manufacture.
And I have actually been trained in de-escalation. Jeff, on the other hand,
they were the Argentinians were trained by the Hungarians, if I'm not mistaken.
Inside FEG joke, guys. Sorry.
Yes.
All right. And let's head out to LaPorte and talk to Michael. Michael, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What's up?
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too, sir.
This is a pre-purchase for your opinion on your list of guns that run and guns that do not run.
Mm-hmm.
How close or how far do you place a Rock Island to a Taurus?
About on the same level. It's probably going to run not too well. That doesn't mean that a Rock Island you can't make run, but the deal is by the time you buy your Rock Island and say, okay, we're going to keep the frame and the slide and maybe the barrel, and then we're going to ditch everything else and take it to a gunsmith and get some good quality Ed Brown or Wilson parts put in there, you're at the cost of what it would have been to buy a decent gun to begin with. And gotcha. And that's pretty much what I'd keep. If I had a Rock Island, somebody gave me one, I won one in a raffle or whatever, the barrel, slide, and frame would stay, and I think every other part internally would be gone.
Well, also, that Rock Island, yeah, that's a $400 1911 if you get the base model. And for $100 more, you get a Glock, you know, or an M&P.
Or if he wants a 1911, he can get the Springfield GI model for $575 or $600. I'd rather have a Springfield GI model.
That's about $650 here in Texas. You can buy a Spartan from STI.
A Spartan from STI, the Ruger R1, the new Ruger, the base models, the Remington is the R1, and the new Ruger. But still, they both for under $700. If I had to have a 1911 that I was going to go on the lower cost end, there's a lot more I'd get before I ended up on the Rock Island.
And there's one called American Tactical Imports as well.
The ATI. That's a Rock Island.
I've had.
I think it is too.
I have watched a number of those go auto in the range.
ATI and Rock Island are pretty much the same gun.
So I haven't seen the Rock Islands do it, but I've seen at least three of the ATIs do it.
Yeah.
So you would put the Ruger higher up the list?
I would put a Ruger higher up the list than a
I'd rather have a Remington.
Yeah, Remington. I would take a Remington over a Ruger, but I've seen several Rugers, and they ran. They ran well.
They do run, and they are sharp. They're pre-sharpened from the factory.
Yep.
Yeah.
The
absolutely.
Springfield GI model, the base model Springfields, or even the Springfield Loaded, I think for like $700 or $800, you could get into the Springfield Loaded that's got the beaver tail and the nicer extended safeties and stuff. And again, you're not breaking the bank. I mean, if I was going to carry for my life a quote-unquote fighting gun, I'd want to get into a nice Colt or the higher-end Springfields. You know, $1,100 would be where I was looking. But if you want a range toy that you know is going to run, I think for $700 you could get into something in a 1911 that would work just fine.
Yeah.
What was the Spartan you said?
STI.
S what?
S Sierra T Tango I.
Indigo.
Indigo.
Yeah.
Steyr Tripp Industries. They're here in Texas. They're Strayer Tripp. Yes. Pardon me, I can't say it right. Anyway, they're just north of Austin. I think they're in Georgetown, if I believe.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's a Texas-made gun. They make a decent product, and for their entry level, their base model 1911, the Spartan's a nice little gun.
Isn't the frame a Rock Island frame?
It's an arm score.
It's an arm score frame, okay. But it's put together by somebody who knows what they're doing, not somebody making 18 cents an hour in a hut.
It's not put together by child labor.
But that's the thing. Arm score frames are made to spec. Now, they're cast. They're not the strongest frames in the world, but for a range gun or just a gun that you want to build as a competition gun or a toy, not a bad choice.
No.
Okay. Real good. Thank you very much.
No problem.
You got
sir.
It, Michael. Thank you, sir.
Let's talk ghost ring sights for a second, shall
let's
we?
Not, let's save let's, that let's for not. Hour number two.
Or let's save that when we're talking about what not to put on your gun.
Let's head out to Tomball and talk to Mike. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, man, great talking to you. You know, we've been out to your shop, and I'm trying to get something for my wife. She has taken a lesson from Tracy, and we went out and tried some things about a week ago. And with the 380, she did really, really well. She's kind of married to a 9mm, and just was all over the place. And my son and I were out there too, and he just got out of the Marines. I mean, we were kind of laughing at what was happening. My question is, okay, you got a 380, you've got what, eight in the chamber? I mean, eight plus?
Depends on the gun.
Depends on the gun.
Seven, those are common.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then 9mm, you're looking at almost double that.
Depending on the gun. Because you could get into a shield or something like that, or a car that only has six or seven rounds also, so capacity could be equal.
Yeah, I'm just fumbling here.
Is it just the recoil of the 9 that she doesn't like? She prefers the softer shooting 380?
She couldn't hit poo-poo. I mean, it was...
Are we comparing apples and oranges of the same type of gun, the same type of action, if one was double action only and one was double single, or... Grip size for the hand?
That's a great question. I don't know. I was using your guys as a using her as an example, and, mm-hmm. and you guys as instructor. I mean, it was we kind of pushed the envelope. I mean, we're going to come back out there now.
No problem. I mean, if she can shoot a 380 better than a 9mm, then that's what she can shoot. You'd rather have her, I think, hitting with a 380 than missing with a 9. But if she can hit with a 380, she can also hit with a 9. That would be more of a practice
issue. That's where I'm going. I mean, I just think, you know, I don't know,
the ammo is going to be half the cost if you're going 9mm.
Well, I tell you what, Mike, you're a returning customer. You spend your money with us. We certainly don't mind helping you. So the next time y'all come out,
make sure to grab me and I'll head out
to the range with you and see what we can diagnose and figure out what's going on here.
But Jeff, you got to know, I am Eggnog Mike.
I didn't realize it was you, Eggnog Mike. You didn't have
any obscenities. I have laughed so many times. As a matter of fact, one time I was talking to you and I wanted to tell you that. And we walked out of the place and I was like, I got to tell you who I am.
You got to get me, Mike.
Oh, yeah, man.
Thanks for calling, Mike.
You're all a hoop. Okay, we'll be back out there.
All right. Houston, that's hour number one.
Hey,
Merry
Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too, Mike. Many eggnogs for you over the next few days. Hour number two of Guns Over Texas coming up soon.
From KSEV, the voice of Texas, this is Guns Over Texas. Jeff Sanford and Gary Montgomery are the gun nuts. They believe in America. They fight for your Second Amendment rights. They teach safety, advanced shooting skills, and responsible gun ownership. They just love guns. Guns Over Texas starts now.
Welcome back to hour number two of Guns Over Texas, Houston. We're talking guns, gear, CHLs, ammo. Anything you want to talk about is fair game. You can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. Gary, how else can they get in touch with us during hour number two?
You can reach us at facebook.com/GunsOverTexasRadio. You can also reach us at GunsOverTexasRadio.com or on the Texas Gun Talk Forum.
All right. Now, we, at the end of the first hour, I looked out into the window in the producer's booth and saw that we had been graced with the presence of the most beautiful blonde in all of Houston, Texas. So, Cassie Sanford. Please say hi to our listeners.
Hi.
And her older brother, Brock. Brock, say hi to Houston.
Hello.
All right. Now, Cassie is going to regale us with, she's going to make her singing debut here on Guns Over Texas. So, Cassie, I'm going to let you have the floor. The microphone is yours. Sing.
Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright, round young virgin, mother and child, holy infant so tender and mild, sleep in heavenly peace, sleep in heavenly peace.
All right. That was her radio debut. So 20 years from now, when she's topping the pop charts, we can say that Cassie started on Guns Over Texas. You know, Coleon Noir can attest that we have launched a career.
Indeed. Can't get him back on, but we did launch a career.
All right. So What were we talking about before we hit the before we hit our break there?
Well, we've been talking to lots of different guns, and we were kind of defending our well, not really defending, but explaining why we're not necessarily the biggest fans of some guns like Bursas.
Bursa
and
stuff. Yep.
So,
and then we had gotten the call to touch on, which we could see the caller's questions on our type-in screen there. And basically the last caller who had called in, Eggnog Mike, was talking about his wife and the differences between 380 and 9mm and why we might push one over the other.
Yep.
And just to touch on that a little bit more, I know we go over it quite a bit, but it always gets asked again and again. 380 is not a bad cartridge, but it's not the best cartridge, and it's not as available as 9mm. You don't have as many options, and when you can find the options of ammo, it usually costs almost twice as much per box as 9mm. So you're getting a round that's not quite as powerful. You're going to end up pretty close to the same capacity with a lot of the smaller guns, only one or two round difference, and you're going to pay twice as much for your practice ammo as if you would just buy some quality, decent, proven 9mm and drive on from there.
In every couple of months? You can't find 380.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it has its spurts where it's available, and then it has its longer spurts when it's not available.
And plus 380 is, what, 800 feet per second? Travels 750, 800 feet per second as opposed to
900
9mm.
On the outside, yeah. And it's, I mean, the thing is it's a marginal caliber at best with respect to a self-defense cartridge. Your choices in terms of ammunition are somewhat limited. You're going to end up doing an 80 to a 90 grain, maybe on the high end, 100 grain bullet, but they're going to be launched at lower velocities, you know, 200 to 300 feet per second slower than you would get out of a 9mm. And we've seen it. You've actually seen it at your range where a person who shall remain nameless managed to strum a round off through his hand. And that round was found, what, 15 or 20 feet downrange after passing through nothing but the fat part of the guy's hand?
Oh, no, it was about 3 feet from where he was standing. So,
I mean, knowing
now,
that.
Granted, it was that low-powered Hungarian FMJ, it's RCB or something like that. Yeah. I can't remember what the initials
were. But even still, it should have had an easier time passing through.
Yeah, you'd think just passing through an inch of fat wouldn't slow it down too much, but it definitely did. I mean, you could actually tell where it bounced and hit the ground, you know, watching the blood splatter.
Yep.
So it was pretty ridiculous. Now we're talking, since we're talking about these pocket guns and the slim, the single stack guns, I got a little backstory into the XDS recall. And as we've talked about before, I am a fan of the XDS in 9mm.
There should be one of us.
I think it shoots really nice. It's got less snap to it than the Shield does. Mm-hmm. It's got a fiber optic front sight, and so I think it is a good option if somebody, you know, if you can't find the Shield and you want to spend an extra $100, you know, XDS is not a bad way to go. They've caught now 45 is a different story for me. I'm not a big fan of the 45. The 9 I really like. Mm-hmm. Now, we've given Springfield quite a bit of grief, both on our show and, you know, in regular life, about their XDS recall. And we thought, you know, they had to recall every single gun from the very beginning up until the last one on the assembly line. And they couldn't figure out what the problem was. And we certainly made a lot of fun of that. You know, these engineers build a gun, can't figure out what's the matter with it, blah, 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 blah. And, it's just the Croatian sensation, you know, and on and on. Well,
hey, that part's true.
Yeah. I got an email from my buddy John Farnham, and he was talking to the engineers at Springfield. He's got a lot of good friends at Springfield Armory. His wife carries an XDS. And he said that his friends at Springfield explained that a single customer, an XDS owner, said he experienced a slam fire with his XDS during the normal loading process. So when Springfield asked him to send the gun back to them, he did. And through all the testing at the factory, which is where we're getting these emails, we don't know what's wrong yet, but we'll get it out as soon as we can. Mm-hmm. Using all different types of ammunition, Springfield was never able to duplicate the reported slam fire. Either with his pistol or with any other copy of the XDS.
And yet they still recalled pretty much all of them.
Well,
all
of them.
Which, don't get me wrong, I'm not blaming them.
Wait, no, I'm sorry. It was in a serial number range.
Yeah, but that range
so that
was pretty much
probably all of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, that was all that would have been in production up to that point.
Yeah.
But now we're thinking, as we were talking off air, that did this person actually have a slam fire, or did this person have their booger hook on the banks, which, as Gary likes to say,
yes,
and strummed off around, and they immediately said, I didn't do that. The gun spontaneously went off.
Right.
Well,
and were convincing enough to...
According to Springfield Armory,
ooh, man,
not one other instance of a slam fire has been reported.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, but that's the. I think that going ahead with the recall boils down to being overly cautious, and
it was in modern semi good PR, yeah, because they show, look, we care about our people, as opposed to saying we ignored it. We had report. I mean, so in a litigious society that we are in, they probably didn't have much choice.
That makes me feel a lot better about it. Yeah, it really does. Knowing the backstory,
it's kind of like those horrible cars that kept shooting all the NYPD guys in the leg.
Oh yeah,
you know, because the car just went off.
With its K-A-H-R.
Yes, with its 12-round, or pardon me, its 12-pound
double action
only trigger pull that just went off by itself,
yeah,
what, 25 times?
You know,
but only in the NYPD, and never in any of the million other cars that are around the country, but somehow the ones that are in New York just spontaneously strum off through people's leg all the time.
Well, you know, there was a similar story out of Southern California once where an officer had a Smith & Wesson revolver. And he was in the process of arresting a suspect, and while trying to arrest a suspect, a car drove by, and he heard the discharge of that car's tailpipe and had a sympathetic reflex that resulted in him strumming through a 20-plus pound trigger, and the gun was pointing in a bad direction.
But isn't this why we don't keep our finger on the trigger?
Absolutely why we keep our finger away from the trigger, out of the trigger bow. Not even, and in theory,
and
why we keep
it in a safe direction.
In a safe direction, whatever that may be at the time. Mm-hmm. Now, don't get me wrong. There's times that pointing at a suspect is the safe place to point it. But while you're on top of him with your knee in his back, might not be that time.
You know, Remington has tons of lawsuits against their 700 right now, which is their bolt-action gun, for the guns allegedly just going off.
Right. But yeah, there was a problem with some early guns that moving the safety on and off would cause them to discharge.
Why was it pointed at anybody when they were moving the safety off and on?
Thank you.
Absolutely.
So don't point your gun at anything you do not intend to put a hole in is the moral of the story. But I feel good about what Springfield did in recalling all those guns. Actually, that's what Smith & Wesson did with the Shield. The story I heard behind the Shield, you know, there was that little tab behind the gun, and they wanted everybody to check and make sure that there behind the trigger, the little tab was actually functional.
But you know, that tab, I mean, that comes back to keep your booger hook off the base, which it's not a problem.
Well, on their assembly line, the guy putting the guns together let one of them get down to the next station before he realized, oh, I put that spring on backwards and went and ran and tried to get it. And by then they said, no, recall.
Recall. Well, we all noticed our guns ran fine, and we hadn't seen any of them that had the problem.
There were no issues with ours. Another gun getting released. It's going to be shown at the SHOT Show. I'm not overly excited about it, but I know others will be. A new Ruger LCR light compact revolver. And that's the gun, the back half of the gun, basically the grip and behind the cylinder. Exactly.
Gone. Yes.
Is all polymer, so it makes a lightweight revolver. Not a bad backup. You know, it's a five-shot revolver. This is going to be DASA, so it's going to have an exposed hammer. And they say that it'll still work with all holsters, accessories, all that kind of thing. And I'm sure they'll have one rated for .357, another for .38+B, all kinds
of stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that gun per se, but for its intended usage as a kind of a backup belly gun and deep concealment, the hammer is not necessarily the greatest thing in the world. There's a reason they made it hammerless to begin with.
Exactly. Right?
So you could get it in and out of your waistband and pocket and everything, deep concealment. So it's I think that's a answer in search of a question. I don't think anybody was clamoring for that particular model.
Jason, before the show started and we were having our fun, really I think the best parts of the show happened before we actually get on the air. We were talking about an article you read in American Rifleman.
Yes.
Why don't you, well, tell us about it.
Oh, well, American Rifleman, this...
This is a topic that's near and dear to your heart because you've spent about the last year and a half trying to talk people
folks,
off
the
ledge.
Well, January 2014's American Rifleman just showed up a month early, and the article in there is titled, Why We've Had an Ammunition Shortage.
Because Department of Homeland Security's buying all the ammo, and it's only hollow points. They're coming for us.
Well, they did manage
FEMA's got coffins everywhere.
Unfortunately, half a million is last count I heard.
Oh, God. Well, basically, if you read the whole article, which I won't bother doing on air, it basically says everything that I said about a year ago. And basically,
so
it's
you're not going to read it. You're just going to say nan nanny boo boo.
Nan nanny boo boo. Yes.
Well, no. Let's hit the highlights. Which is...
highlights was basically that Homeland Security. It says here that they determined Representative Jason Chaffetz, a Republican from Utah, and
Chaffetz.
I can't even pronounce anything right.
Chaffetz.
Anyway, basically, determined that DHS is actually using more than 1,000 rounds of ammunition per person per year in training. And they verified this, and basically they went through all the contract numbers for the past 10 years and found out that it's been consistent, whether it was Bush in office or anybody else in office.
Okay, so 1,000 a year per federal agent.
Per federal agent. Roughly, and they went through and found the numbers. They've got listed in here for Customs and Border Protection, FLETC, the Federal Protective Service, ICE, the Transportation Security Administration, the U.S. Coast Guard, the U.S. Secret Service, and worked it all the way out basically to where they're actually using less ammo now than they did in 2010. Mm-hmm. In 2010, it appeared they were going through 109 million rounds a year, and in 2012, they only went through 88 million rounds a year. So they actually went down in the total number of rounds used, but everybody's still screaming that the government's the reason there's no ammo on the shelves. But if you read the whole article, it boils down to exactly what we said. More people bought guns after January of last year than had bought them in the past 5 or 7 years combined.
Yep.
And all those new shooters with all their new guns wanted to buy ammo. And all those people who already had guns wanted to buy ammo and hoard it. And that is what really caused the shortage.
Why do the federal agents get to shoot 1,000 rounds a year in qualifications and training while our local guys
that's our local agency's decision
50, because that's the budget
yeah
50 rounds a year. All right, Houston,
how come none of them can hit what they aim for anyway?
Let's hit on that when we come back.
That guy's getting some speeding tickets on the way home.
Yep.
And we're gonna hit a quick commercial
break.
We'll be right
Sanford.
Back with more Guns Over Texas.
White male, blonde hair.
Michael Jackson singing the Christmas songs, Gary made a fantastic point that only in America does a little black boy grow up to be an old white woman.
See, I didn't say that in mixed company.
It's the truth. There's a, hey, don't worry about offending people. Come on, man. We're the place that PC went to die.
Yeah, I know.
All right. So we were talking about the difference in law enforcement agencies. Federal agents shooting 1,000 rounds a year per qualification.
Versus
per,
like 50
and the locals shoot about 50.
But you know what? That boils, you know, Jason made an excellent point. That boils down to budget. And not every local agency is so poor in that regard.
There are several local sheriff's departments around us that I know for a fact do 2 quals a year at about 100 rounds per time.
Right.
And it just depends. I know that FBI or Secret Service or any of those federal agencies, they all qual quarterly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And every quarter they shoot about 150 to 250 rounds. Yeah. So that adds up to about 1,000 rounds per year. So they just get a little bit more training time. But again, how many times has the federal government been sued? And the federal government steps up and says, you know what? It's cheaper to throw a little bit more training their way. And that way, when the lawsuit does come, all they're really doing is saying, hey, we showed him what to do. If he messed up,
but
it's on him.
Are they training to drive the MRAP? One of the things that can be pointed out is that federal agents don't get into shootings nearly as often.
Not nearly.
And
but
now some of that's just number of contact.
And again, they're not doing the 2A. I mean, the dangerous stuff is domestic disputes and traffic stops.
Right.
That's where the rubber meets the road for real dangers with officers 90% of the time. And local PDs do that, and federal agencies don't do that. But local PDs don't have the money most of the time, or the training time allotted, or the range facilities allotted. So they get their 50 rounds, and then they go forth and hope for the best, which isn't necessarily the best strategy, but you know, it is what it is. It's the money they
have to work with. Now, I will say what is somewhat bothersome. I know of lots of agencies that provide their officers a stipend. They pay the officer, in addition to their regular pay, $2,500, $3,000, $4,000 a year to not just buy equipment, but to, you know, and not just their equipment and their uniforms, but to buy ammunition and go to the range. They have a free range available to them. The agency may give them ammunition, and you have officers who won't do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's that way in every agency. You've got a lot of guys that are, you know, they want to ride their desk. And it is what it is. I'm not sure why they became cops, but there are guys that want to ride the desk, and there are computer nerds, and there are accounting nerds, and there are...
You know how well it goes
in a bar
to tell a woman that you're a cop?
Yeah,
that's why they're doing it.
But every agency still is going to need those people that aren't the door kickers, that are the support people that, you know, okay, yeah, we kicked in the door and we got all this stuff and we have all these computers. Well, you know, somebody at the FBI or wherever has got to go through those computers and find all the stuff that's on them. So there's always going to be a need for the non-gun toter, non-tough guy out there. There's a need for it.
You know, I've gotten to know the guy who's in charge of the computer crimes, like sex crimes and pedophilia and stuff like that for our local
Knowing
area.
Who your brother is, I imagine you do.
I tell you what, that guy is awesome. I don't know if I'm allowed to say his name. I'll just say his first name, Gary. But what
guys named Gary are cool.
Awesome guy, man. And the stuff that they must see when you get a sicko's computer, I could not imagine.
You know, that's one job I don't know that I could do is sitting there. You have to seek that out.
Yeah.
And sit there and look at it to make a case. I don't know that I could do that.
I can't imagine someone that would go on the internet to specifically look for deviant things.
Have you looked in the mirror?
Pot calling kettle black. Hello.
Wow.
You know they can track your IP address, Mac. I'm just letting you know that right now.
Lady doth protest too much, Mac.
Yeah. I just think that's sick. That's
we're
going to
be watching
behavior.
MSNBC one day and Chris, hey, come on in and sit down. Have some lemonade. Chris Hansen's going to call you
the
in.
The sad part is he's going to do it accidentally. He won't be seeking it out. He'll just stumble into it.
No, that's not it at all. Unless it's a – never mind.
Yeah.
281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738 if you want to get involved in this twisted show, the Christmas edition of Guns Over Texas. So let's head out to Memorial Park and talk to Dan. Dan, welcome to Guns Over Texas.
Oh, great. It's nice and crispy out here.
Indeed. It feels great.
I'm listening. This isn't a very Christmas spirit type of call. I'm calling about lie detector tests.
Okay.
My son was shot to death in 2006. Mm-hmm. I was the first one to get to the body, supposedly. Mm-hmm. The homicide detective said there was no gun gas from residue, therefore it cannot be suicide or self-inflicted. Mm-hmm. The coroner said he'd been dead for like 2 days or two at least, maybe more. Mm-hmm. And when I got there to get in his apartment, there was somebody in the apartment. I saw them moving around in the apartment, the far room, past the front door to the next room. And I told the coroner that, mm-hmm. and they ruled it suicide. They said it was undoubtedly suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been talking. I won't mention any names, but I sure like to. But the coroner did the autopsy. He said there's no doubt about it. He didn't care that the homicide detective on the scene said there was no gun gas residue. He said that guy might not have been qualified to take the test, mm-hmm. to make the test. And I said, well, let's find out. He didn't care. But, I mean, if this late date, if I take a lie detector test, would that mean anything? I mean, I've called these people to give our test, and they act like, well, it's just up to this judge, but it means anything.
Well, not exactly a normal topic we would tackle here at Guns Over Texas, but they can't scientifically prove that a lie detector test actually detects lies, and that's why they're not admissible in court.
Right.
And you can take one all day long, but it really doesn't carry any weight in a legal sense. It's more of an investigative tool to kind of help people get pointed in the right direction. And they do have some merit, but basically they're not detecting lies. They're detecting stresses, body stresses. They're detecting your heart rate, your galvanic skin response, the pores opening up on your body and so forth. And typically they can tell that a certain topic stresses you. It makes you uncomfortable. It makes you nervous, but that is not necessarily indicative that you're lying.
Right. It simply indicate you've been offended.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of things in there. So a lie detector test is a tool that a law enforcement agency can use, but it's not a tool that's so advanced that they can use it in a court of law and be 100% accurate.
One more thing, please, if I could ask. His boss, he was at work less than 24 hours before I found his body. Mm-hmm. And his boss says he was at work, so he's not even dead 3 or 4 days. I found out once according to the rules, something, you might as well be talking to Hitler Nazis or something. Nothing you say can change anybody's opinion. Look, if I went to court, a civil court, and sued to have his death certificate changed, and if I got to say one more thing, when we went to Heitz funeral home, my wife will verify this, we were running his funeral, they said, well, for $10,000, his death certificate will not say suicide. And I can prove that's true. And so I've one hell of a stinking stink here. Something stinks, to say the least.
Yeah, sir, I honestly don't know what to tell you, because I haven't heard this type of circumstance come up before, and obviously I'm the pro-law enforcement kind of guy there, but if you feel there's a case, I mean, get a hold of a lawyer and see what you can make happen. I don't know the circumstances involving it.
Well, I have lawyers that told me that nowhere ever in the history of the Texas has any coroner been refuted successfully, because that's how powerful they are.
I could believe that. However, there was a case with, well, actually, a bunch of Houston's coroners and the crime lab got overturned, famously, just a few years ago. So it does seem to be possible, but the circumstances for that are pretty, they're rather dramatic.
Well, the crime has been a bunch of so-and-so's since day one.
Right.
Well, you know, I might recommend a good PI.
Well, now I have had some success in overturning coroners, you know, some coroners' reports, but not in Texas. This was in a Randolph County, North Carolina case that I'd worked, but it was gross negligence and gross incompetence on the coroner's part,
yeah.
In a number of cases, and it was extremely difficult and time consuming. This is something I would suggest. Was it the sheriff's department that was handling the investigation?
Harris County, yes, the sheriff, not in the city.
Okay, so it wasn't the constables. It was the sheriff's department, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay,
homicide detective.
What you might want to do is contact the cold case division of Harris County and petition the cold case division to reopen the case and explore it. I recently had some success on another case doing that also. And it takes a while for them to get to, but, you know, eventually they'll do it. The squeaky wheel gets the grease in a case like this.
Does that mean going to civil court?
No, you can do it without – you just be the biggest pain in Adrian Garcia's butt that you possibly can be. You know, contact them by email, phone calls, and demand that your case be reevaluated and reopened by cold case.
Well, God bless Adrian Garcia. I think he's a great guy, but I'm not trying to put anything – I mean, I'm just trying to get – you know what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what you have to do. That's the way the game is played, and the sheriff's department is a big game of politics, and you just have to play the game.
Yeah, really. He's ever joined the Masons or something.
Hey, that wouldn't help. I mean, that wouldn't hurt. That wouldn't hurt. But that's what I would suggest to do. You know, because I can attest to it. Just recently, I've had some really good success doing that. And just be polite, but be persistent. You know, demand that demand it over and over again. Say, I want this case reopened, and I want it transferred to cold case.
I've been squeaking the wheel. They just told me to get lost. I got it in writing to an email. We're too busy to talk to you. Go away.
Then you just keep on and keep on and keep on.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Amen. Thank you.
If
you're welcome.
Telling you to go away, then that means that you're hitting a nerve. So yep. I would continue keeping on.
Jumping up and down on that last nerve all you can.
All right. Well, Dan, good luck to you. And you can get us on Guns Over Texas Radio on Facebook. Or I tell you what, send me an email to jeff@gunsovertexasradio.com.
Just amazing. And, checks that nowadays.
And I will get you the information for Mac if you're interested in a PI. All right. So, Mac, besides the Kel-Tec, what's new in your gun world lately, man?
The Boberg 9mm.
That is a weird looking gun to me. I can't get excited about it.
It is, and it's nothing that anybody else has got. So it's of course what he's going to be going after.
They're not cheap either.
Does he have?
No, have you got it yet? They're at least a grand. I think.
Yeah, $1,100 to when all is said and done, almost closer to $1,200. But it has a reverse feed. The Boberg is a weird gun. The magazine goes in backwards.
So therefore, you like it?
Of course. But the magazine goes in backwards, and the bullets are facing the back strap when it goes in. The top bullet is pushed backwards and flipped over and inserted into the barrel.
If Rube Goldberg designed a handgun, it would be a Boberg.
I don't see how anything could possibly go wrong with this.
Yeah, and why? There's a reason that a lot of guns look a lot alike inside and so forth. I mean, it's simple is better.
Hey,
and the old, we're going to strip the round backwards and feed it in a flipped manner to go forward. Just
You know, maybe it might run. I've actually read a couple of reviews from guys that I know of that aren't Guns and Ammo magazine kind of guys that.
Is it going to run when it gets
ran
dirt
for them,
and sand or mud or anything in it?
$1,200 gun.
It's more of a gun, in my opinion, that a billionaire would carry to a crooked poker game.
So this is what you're going to wear in your tuxedo when you're out going Bond.
Yeah.
James Bond.
No, when you're in the back room of a strip club at 3 o'clock in the morning playing poker with a bunch of, you know, grease balls. I think this would be a great gun to have.
Because why would you be home with your kids at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Well, yeah, they're old. I mean,
no
they're what,
good
they're what,
comes
five
from being
and seven
out at
now. They're old
in
enough
the morning,
to be by
dude.
Themselves, aren't they?
You know, you bring up a good point, Jeff. Just when you're talking about the reviewers that are going to talk about it and so forth, it touches on the call that we had earlier, and it's that when people review guns, you have to look at the vested interest they have in their review sometime. Now, none of us here on this show get paid any endorsement money. We don't get anything for free. We get nothing. If we like something, we like it. If we don't like something, we don't like it. And I've bought stuff before thinking it was going to be great, used it, thought, wow, after I used it, it's a piece of
the
junk.
HKP30.
Yeah, there's been a few of them that once I got into them, I didn't like it that much. I've sold two HKs that I bought and thought were going to be great, and I just didn't like them. But it boils down to we don't have the vested interest and also the ego to say that, you know what, I bought it and it's not for me and I'm going to get rid of it. Now, some people, when they say, oh, my Bursa is the greatest thing in the world, it might run great. The other thing might be that I'm on the Bursa forum and I'm here to thump my chest about how, look at what a great decision I made. I'm validating my own decision because I can't make a mistake. I couldn't admit I made a mistake. You know, so a lot of people, even if their gun doesn't run, they're never going to admit it didn't work. Oh, well, those were break-in jams.
I don't know anybody that does that.
Yeah, and so in the grand scheme of things, there's a lot of the internet bravado of, I can't admit I made a mistake, and I'm going to look for a forum that I can go to where everybody thinks like I do, and we're just going to sit around and agree with each other, mm-hmm. which is not necessarily conducive to the best information. Mm-hmm. If you want to know about XDs and you go to the XD forum, you're going to get 10,000 XD fanboys. If you go to the SIG forum, you're going to get nothing but SIG fanboys. If you go to some other areas where, like I go to Pistol Forum a lot, pistoltraining.com has a website called Pistol Forum. And in the Pistol Forum, it's not sponsored by any particular manufacturer. It's run by Todd Green, the guy you mentioned earlier that was the big proponent of
the
H&K.
45 tactical.
He takes different gun every year or so, and he does a 100,000 round test on it. And he runs that gun for 100,000 rounds and sees if it runs or if it doesn't run. He's done a Glock. He's done a Smith & Wesson M&P. He's done a P30. He's done the HK45. He's doing a Smith & Wesson 9mm 1911 right now. But he's going to run that gun into the ground. And nobody on that site has a particular vested interest in, oh, my gun's better, my Kung Fu is better than your Kung Fu, that type of thing. So that's typically the place I would go to look for reviews other than what I see at the range.
Now, we have a real-life prime example of this in studio for the history of the show. Uh-huh. I was the first one to carry a Charter Arms 38, and I was made fun of relentlessly until Charter Arms provided us with some pistols to test, and uh-huh. we put them through hell torture test,
uh-huh.
and they did fantastically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They did really well.
Still pretty sharp from the factory. But they run.
Yeah, and they did get white hot, and we did ruin the finish, but, you know, I don't know many other revolvers that could maintain a nice, sweet finish after, you know, 3,000 rounds in 30 minutes or whatever it was that we did.
Wow.
So, as we go to this commercial break, we want to wish a very happy birthday to Chuck, our Sunday manager at Shiloh Shooting Range. So, if you're sitting around, give Chuck a call, 281-444-8930. Tell him happy birthday and you want to buy a CHL.
Frosty the Snowman was a jolly happy soul. With a corncob pipe and a button nose and two eyes made out of coal.
Frosty the Snowman. So, but the children know how he came to life one day.
just a bit. Welcome back to hour number two of Guns Over Texas, Houston. As we start this segment of the show, we're going to do a player profile on what is bound to be the next big thing in the NFL. My nephew, Brock Sanford. Brock, welcome to Guns Over Texas, making your Guns Over Texas debut.
Hi.
This is bound to be an amazing interview. So, Brock, how old are you?
10.
Okay, and who do you play football for?
The Tomball Titans.
Tell him what your nickname is.
Big Block Brock.
Speak into the microphone. Say that one more time.
Big Block Brock.
All right, and what team do you play for?
The Tomball Titans.
And what position do you play?
Right guard.
Right guard. What does a right guard do?
Block.
Big block?
I thought it went under an armpit.
Yeah, it's deodorant, isn't it?
You're banned from the mic, Mac.
So, who do you block for, Brock?
The quarterback.
Okay, are you a mean and nasty player? Do you get up in people's grills and slap them in the face and take them down?
Yeah.
I find that a little hard to believe.
No.
Okay, well, there was a story that he told me that I was exceptionally proud of. They were playing another team, a rather large and brutal team, and the guy that Brock was going up against kept saying, he goes, "I'm going to own you, son. I'm going to own you, son." And Brock looked up and said, "I'm not your son. I'm your daddy."
All right. Well, good job, Brock. Keep on keep owning that defensive line out there for the Tomball
Titans. Offensive line?
No, but you go against the defensive line. You own them.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So, Brock, do you want to say Merry Christmas to everybody?
Merry Christmas.
Thank you for such an inspiring interview, young Brock Sanford. You've definitely got a future in media. All right. So, back to Gun Talk. Jason.
Oh, my quick Gun Talk, just to finish up what we had mentioned earlier, is that when people are doing gun reviews, and people have heard of Nuttin' Fancy, I'm sure. He's a guy online. He has a big YouTube presence. He has like 400,000 views of his videos. He probably has over 100 videos of different reviews. And the guy hasn't met anything he doesn't love.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, he'll call, say he calls Smith & Wesson, or he calls Ruger and says, "Hey, send me a gun to test, and I'll do a 30-minute video on it." They send him a gun. He does a 30-minute video on it. He loves it. He calls him back and says, "Hey, I'm ready to send this gun back." Like, no, you hold on to that. You tell all your friends how great it is. Well, the same token is, if he calls him up and says, "Man, I had nothing but problems. It was a Jam-O-Matic," and they'll say either, "Well, we'll send you something new. I wouldn't put that on your video." Or if you do put that on the video, guess what? Send us our gun back, and the next time you call to ask for our new product to get reviewed, you're not going to get your answer.
Right.
We're not going to send you anything, ever. And so if you look at all these channels, whether it's the gunblast.com, nuttandfancy.com, there's three or four other ones out there, they have never met a gun they don't like.
This Jimenez Arms is the greatest little pocket gun I've ever seen.
Every gun works perfectly.
It has long been said, whether it be American
Rifleman. Same with the magazines.
I was going to say, whether it be American Rifleman, guns and ammo, you name it. There's an old executive who was talking to a friend of mine once, and he said, "Look, at the end of the day, the commercials or the ads that we have in here, the gun reviews, are simply the things we put in between the ads."
Yep.
At the end of the day, it's all about the advertising. And
just like Cosmo, if you've got a 100-page Cosmo for the ladies, it's probably 15 to 20 pages of articles and then 75 pages of advertising.
How on earth would you know that?
He owns four cats, man.
And I have females living at my home as opposed to renting them to come.
He's
whenever.
Got a house.
Okay, good point. That's actually a valid point.
My women are not inflatable that I live with.
No.
But anyway, it's all about the advertising, and it's advertising driven. And if anybody tells the truth, they are shunned from the industry. Mm-hmm. And the same with when you go to the industry specific forums. If you're not there to drink the Kool-Aid and bathe in the Kool-Aid and tell everybody, "Yeah, I'm cool too because I got just what you guys got, and we all like what we got because we're all smart, right? We're all smart. We didn't make a mistake, right? Please tell me I didn't make a mistake." Then that's basically what they are. They're cheerleading forums for themselves. So whenever you're online and you're researching for firearms, I highly recommend your research for firearms. We are definitely not the only quality source out there. There's plenty of them out there. But wherever you're looking, look at the source material and make sure that they don't have a vested interest in telling you what you want to hear.
I like how he called us a quality source.
I mean, I'm going to go on the line and say that I'm not an expert. And when I first came on, Jeff would say law enforcement expert. And off air, I'd go, dude, I'm not an expert.
So now I've only been doing it for 20 years.
Well,
yeah.
at 15 years in, you know the beating I would take at the office when people, oh, it's Mr. Expert. Let me get out of the way for the expert. And so it's a lot easier on me now.
Then you should use that and say, yeah, clear the path. I'm coming through. Yeah. Throw some big block rock
I'm
on
shaft.
It.
Well, on that same note, there was that magazine recently that just did the article about the 100 top or the 100 firearms write-ups, you know, and it had a 4-page article on a FEG PA-63 and how wonderful of a carry gun it was. Mm-hmm. So, and I didn't see any FEG advertisements, but I sure saw a FEG who wrote it.
Yes. Well, like, everybody wants the new Kel-Tec KSG, and remember I found that one video that Breech Brand Clear did where they couldn't get a whole tube, and a tube's only seven shots on each side. Mm-hmm. They couldn't get a whole tube of ammo to run without it jamming.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they videotaped, and they just left the camera going. It's about an hour-long video. And in this hour-long video, they probably do 400 to 500 rounds, and they can't get more than 3 rounds off without a jam.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, well, you can go online and you'll find everybody talking about how theirs is great or it had a minor break-in period. But after the break-in period, it's like, no, this is it. It doesn't work. And we send it back to them. We get another one. And guess what? The new one we got, it didn't work. You know, so not every gun manufacturer is going to patronize the people who tell the truth.
Now, it can be said among the reputable manufacturers, the Smith & Wessons, even Ruger, that for the most part, they all actually build decent guns.
Yeah, and if you get a lemon, that's the other thing, is I would be willing to say, if you sent me a gun that didn't run and I call you and say it doesn't run, send me something else. But the problem there is, are they cherry-picking something out of the custom shop to send to you? Whereas there used to be a review, I don't even know it's out anymore, the gunreports.com, the consumer reports of guns, where they would go to a random pawn shop or a random store like Academy buy it. And then they'd publish their results that they found. Now, the only problem I had there is it was a sample size of one, which we have to get into. You know, that's a whole other argument. It's always a sample size of one. And that's why I always go back to look at what major departments and major militaries and so forth purchase, because they didn't spend $60 million on buying, you know, 25 or 30,000 guns without doing some research before
they
bought them.
Serious due diligence. Yeah.
So look at those. And if, you know, major departments, whether it's LAPD or Chicago PD or whatever, are adopting them, they probably put a little bit of effort at least into making sure the guns would run before they went to service-wide adoption.
Well, let me ask y'all a quick question. Do you remember a Springfield that was a steel frame 9mm from – it was popular as a tactical pistol in the early 90s, late 80s? I can't remember the
– It was the one that's the CZ clone.
Yes. Yes.
It was a Tanfoglio,
It was a Tanfoglio, and that was the same gun as a Tanfoglio or as an
EA witness.
Or a Springfield Army. And they were all the same gun.
Yeah.
And basically Springfield – I hate to rag on Springfield. Springfield hasn't had a new idea apparently since the 1920s. You know, since
when it was a whole different company and actually a division of the U.S. government.
So when they were actually cranking out 1911s and M14s and stuff. But basically in the commercial market, they haven't been able to design anything that's taken off. And they've tried with a couple of different things that haven't taken off. They tried introducing their version of the CZ, and they called it the Springfield P6.
Is that what that is?
It was a Tanfoglio that was rebranded. They took a $300 Tanfoglio and made it a $600 Springfield
by changing
the
like
name on the side
of it. XD that used to be a $275.
And it ran so well that they dropped it from their catalog after about 10 years because nobody wanted it. Nobody would buy it. And they'd show up to the Nationals like, we paid Rob Lethem to use our brand new gun. Well, he's kind of got to dance with the one that brung him. You know, that doesn't mean that's the gun he picked. That's the gun they threw a lot of money at him to hold.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? It was a dog then, and it's a dog now, for the most part, the Tanfoglio.
I thought that was called a TF9, like Tanfoglio 9.
Being the T part of it, yes.
Yeah, but okay.
And I had a witness, EAA witness, which is basically a Tanfoglio back in the day, and the thing would kick its safety on every 3 or 4 rounds. It would go on safe. And when you call the factory to complain, they basically said, well, you're supposed to hold your thumb on the safety. No, you're not. It's supposed to not kick on automatically. So, you know, I ditched it. It was a dog. I had one for probably a year, and I realized that no matter how many times it got sent to the factory, because it went back twice, and each time it had the same problems.
Jeez.
So I got rid of it, and now I'll tell people straight up, hey, it's a dog.
Okay.
And all Springfield did after that is they ditched the P6. They looked for another European importer, and they found the HS2000 in Croatia,
and they
said, we're going to sandblast HS2000 off the side of it. We'll re-roll market with a U.S. import, and now it's all of a sudden the Springfield XD.
Okay.
Same gun for only $300 more than it was 6 months ago.
Right.
which, you know, it is what it is.
Now, we talked about the Boberg guns a few minutes ago and how they're maybe trying to reinvent the wheel that's already been done.
Done well
by numerous companies. Now, Gary's inside source in the industry may have mentioned that a certain manufacturer that we give 2 hours, well, it's a 2 hour show, so an hour and 52 minutes of hell to.
Yes.
Yeah. Has come out with something that makes everybody say,
I wish I'd have done that. Yeah.
Or why didn't we think about this before?
Yeah. But no, I can't get any details on it. It's just, it's vaporware as far as I'm concerned for the time being. But okay, supposedly it's a earth shattering revelation.
We are throwing it out there. You have heard it here first. Taurus may have actually done something positive and revolutionary for the gun industry.
I'm going to go out on a limb and be the naysayer and say, I have not seen it yet, and I don't know what it is, but I will already go on record with a comment of, meh.
I'm going to go on record and say no.
unless we have already speculated what it could be. They have spies everywhere, and they are probably listening to us to spy on what we say about them, and I'm willing to bet that they have stolen the concept of the jury.
That's right.
And are introducing their 12-shot.
Revolutionary.
Yes, their revolutionary 12-shot revolver is going to come out and steal my idea.
Yeah, it might be a 12-gauge 12-shot revolver, too.
Dude, the marketing rights itself. How could you not buy one? And dye it purple.
No, in 12-gauge. Yes, Joker.
Yes, that was shot at you, Mac.
Yeah, I know.
Well, you know, in 12-gauge, it would have to be called the executioner. I'm sorry.
I can't imagine.
You could have the judge, the jury, and the executioner as a pistol lineup.
And how many times are we going to be at the shop and some old redneck walks in and says, yeah, I need to get my wife one of them executioners to carry in her purse.
And somebody will buy it, I promise you.
They come in all the time wanting the judge for their wife to carry.
God. And she's never going to fire it. They're going to load it, stick it in her purse.
But think about it. You could sell it for Christmas. Somebody would come in and say, look, dude, I need the Trinity. I need the judge, jury, and executioner.
Yeah. In-laws are coming into town. Hook me up, Taurus style.
There's your new ad campaign. Hook me up, Taurus style.
Hook me up, Taurus style should be giving you $100 in stamps for when you have to send it back 40 times.
For their outstanding customer service.
Coming to Mac, who's got a Kel-Tec on him right now.
There's a big difference between a Kel-Tec and a Taurus, okay? I'm a Kel-Tec fan. I'm not a Taurus fan.
Uh-huh. That doesn't make it any better, Mac.
It really doesn't.
If Kel-Tec would just listen to me as far as my engineering.
If you would just listen to us, you know.
What other gun can
you? You improved. Now, I'm throwing up the quotation marks. Improved your trigger.
By 6
with
pounds.
With a paper clip.
By 6 pounds.
And how many engineering degrees do you have?
None.
Not even necessary. How many did Henry Ford have? No, he revolutionized the world, and he didn't have a single one.
He hired people with engineering degrees that made something that worked.
I hire people all the time, but it's just for other services.
An hour at a time, and it costs extra to get clean sheets, I know.
You know from experience?
An awful lot of credit.
I know. That was very detailed.
Yeah.
But wait, he gave him so much credit. An hour? Really?
Yeah. Oh, well.
She charges for the hour even when it takes a minute. All right.
Okay. 1 minute, 60 minutes, it's all the same.
Jason's like, yeah, man, and then the next thing you know, you're going to be going to 9925 Katy Freeway at the Palace Inn, room 18, the rich by the hour, just like Mac.
What? Wow, you laid out the detail there.
See? You're nailing me up with all these graphic details that can only come from one way.
And as always, I never say where I work, but I can mention I've worked in narcotics for quite some time. Trust me, we are at those locations.
Well, trust me, you've run my plate once or 12 times then.
Probably.
Oh, man.
How'd we get there from Taurus love to prostitution habits of your brother?
Because he's here. We normally don't let him call in.
Taurus is the name of an entertainer. So we were talking, that's how those two correlate.
What's that line he told me once? The only charity I gives money to dances from 2 to 4 over at the men's club.
Let's get back to guns, please.
Oh, man. These last couple minutes went down in flames. Golly.
Radio gold for like literally dozens of listeners across the country. Actually, the quick shout-out, I did get a text from Dirk in Huntsville was listening, and Amy in Oregon was listening as well. So we
yes,
do have
she
our,
keeps threatening to call
coast
in,
to coast.
But won't do it.
I know. But
is Amy on your Facebook?
She is.
I wouldn't know, sir.
You have a gorgeous Amy on your Facebook.
I wouldn't know, sir, because I wouldn't know if she wants her Facebook out there. But
oh,
yeah.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, you know, so we do have coast-to-coast listeners today. I don't know if Chip in Pennsylvania is listening, but if he is, a shout-out to Chip in Pennsylvania. I think that's our full coast-to-coast is Pennsylvania to Oregon.
That's the ones that we know.
That we know of. Well, the others just never call.
Well, fellas, I'm sure as Gary, especially you as a CHL instructor, have seen the concealed handgun license holder badge.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that.
Jason, as a law enforcement officer, thumbs up or thumbs down?
Douchey.
You went yes. thumbs way down.
I went thumbs way down. Douche, 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 douche. No.
Now, don't get me wrong. I do wear my driver's license and CHL in a pendant that I don't expose. It's under my shirt, but I have it there so I can quickly pull it out during a traffic stop. So I'm not making furtive movements and moving around like I'm like hide something under the seat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying not to get shot. But I don't flip that out and hang it out at a gas station asking anybody to think that I'm anything other than just being a keyboard jockey with a gun. So,
well, way up in Fort Worth, the Yankees up there were just dealing with a 54-year-old man named Alejandro Trujillo, who, while he has a concealed handgun license, was arrested this past Wednesday at a car wash because he was walking around with the butt of a gun sticking out of his pocket and his concealed carry license badge around his neck, going through people's vehicles and looking through their
stuff. Let me guess, they charged him with impersonating an officer.
I believe they did. So, and believe it or not, I know this is going to be hard to believe, officers said he appeared to be intoxicated.
Nuh-uh.
So, we're going to wrap up hour number two of Guns Over Texas with that one, Houston. So if you have questions, comments, you want to get involved, you can get us on Facebook, Guns Over Texas Radio on Facebook, and we'll answer any questions you may have not been able to get to during this 2 hours of Guns Over Texas. Merry Christmas to Houston and all of our other listeners all over the place. We appreciate you.
Be back in 2014.
Right. We're going to take next Sunday off, but we'll be back the following Sunday. So in that time, Houston, shoot straight.